Good morning.
Renard, what's going on, bro?
What's up, brother?
Man, I appreciate you coming on to the show.
Of course, you know, you're my man. Let's do it.
Let's get straight into it. We met in the Navy.
Right.
We met in the Navy.
Right.
On deployment? Was it on deployment?
Nah, it was right before deployment, bro. I got to the ship maybe. No. We met right after deployment. You guys had just came back from a deployment.
Okay.
And I got to the ship the day y'all came back. I was there.
Where are you from? You from New Orleans?
I'm from the Indo, yeah. From the Indo.
Yeah. So take us back. Let us go back into your journey. We want to know who you were and how did you end up where you at right now in your life?
Right. So born and raised in New Orleans, Algiers to be specific. Was there up until I was 14, you know, raised by my mom and my dad for the most part. But, you know, mostly my mom. But I had two other siblings. I have two sisters. I have one younger sister and one older sister, all different dads. So, yeah, we stay in New Orleans. You know, you know about New Orleans. You know, its own little beach urban, being me who I am today. I'm thankful, like, you know, being from New Orleans. New Orleans is a very beautiful place to grow up because it's good and it's bad, you know. It has so much culture, so much depth. And especially specifically for Black people, you know, that's a Black city, you know, and most things there are catered to us, even though we're the most like incarcerated city and city on the planet. You know, we're in the most incarcerated state on the planet. So you have those dual things working there where you have a lot of pain and misery because of that. You know, my dad, he was in jail most of my childhood. That's why I said, like, my mom kind of raised us. But when my dad was home, he raised us. But he was in jail for, you know, drugs, for the normal things, guns, stuff like that. And most of the men in my family as well. So, but we made it work. And when I turned 15, that's when Hurricane Katrina happened. We moved to actual H-Town, where you from? And I went to Cyprus.
You was 15 when Katrina happened?
I was 15.
Did y'all leave before the storm hit or?
We left right before the storm hit. I mean, we knew, obviously they were telling us we had to evacuate, right? So we were actually in the process of moving, leaving just like everyone else. We were stuck in traffic. That was crazy.
Y'all drove to Houston?
We drove to Houston. No, first we went to this little town in Louisiana called Jennings, Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
And we stayed there for about 2 months. It was a family that let us stay, you know, there just because of Katrina, whatever. We stayed there for about 2 months. And then they had like some programs, some things happening where they like, hey, you know, go to Houston. We gonna help you start off with all this stuff. So that's what we did. So me, my mom, and my sister, my little sister, my older sister stayed in New Orleans. She didn't leave. She went back to New Orleans. So we went to Houston, Cyprus, and we wound up out there.
You was 15.
Yeah.
Did y'all lose anything?
I mean, honestly, we was poor, bro. Like, we ain't really had nothing else. So it was like, it ain't really, we ain't lose shit. You know what I'm saying? My mama actually had just bought the car that we drove to, you know, everywhere with. She literally bought that car like a month before Katrina happened. So that's the only thing kind of real value we had. We ain't own shit. My mama didn't own no property. You know, it was rented property. You know what I'm saying? So it wasn't nothing major for us. You know, we had some furniture, whatever, but that wasn't nothing. You know?
Was there a culture shock going from New Orleans to Houston?
It was definitely a culture shock. You know, New Orleans is...
Especially going to Cyprus.
Right. New Orleans is a fun, rough, tough place to grow up. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, mostly Black people, everybody Black, you know, and we have very similar ways of conducting ourselves. So it's very... You know, you're very comfortable within that at the same time. You know, moving to Houston, it was very diverse. You know, the school I went to Cy Ridge, and you had all these different cultures and people there, as well as Houston itself, you know, the particular part that we were in, it was very diverse. You know, you had Hispanics, you had whites, you had Blacks. You know, I wasn't quite used to that. You know, I was used to being around a number of Black people. So, and it wasn't like, you know, people wasn't trying to, you know, test you. Since New Orleans, I've never been in a fight. Like, New Orleans was my last time I ever been in a physical fight, like a real fight. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So It was definitely a culture shock.
Were you playing football in New Orleans?
I wasn't playing football. I didn't play football in New Orleans.
But you played football when you got to Cyprus.
I played football when I played when I went to Cyprus. That was now that was a culture shock. That was a shock, you know, because I went when I was a freshman. So I played for my first time when I was a freshman, and yeah, man, it was an experience because the amount of work that it took to that I never knew that you needed to do to actually play and get on the field. It was ridiculous. And
it's like a full-time job.
It's like a full-time job as a freshman. And at this particular school, at this particular time, we had one of the top players in the country, the number one player in the country at the school. So it was even, which we didn't know that as freshmen, but eventually he became the number one player, you know what I'm saying? But it was challenging, you know? Yeah.
What'd you gain from it?
Say it again?
What'd you gain from it?
Man, like,
because going honestly, from New Orleans, like me,
right?
Going from New Orleans, you know, you just losing your hometown, and right. you have to start all over in a whole other city, and you start right. to play a sport. Yeah. You're in a community that you're not used to.
Right.
Well, what was that experience like, or what did you gain from it? What did you take from it during that whole time?
Right. What you mean, football or just
all
like,
of it? All of it. From moving to a different city to having to adapt to a whole other community.
Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, it was like. I mean, football, it's that little part was difficult, but what I experienced was like, dang, these people are living like safely, nice. Like the whole experience of just like moving into like from a jungle to like, you know, you don't have to worry about nobody want to fight, no one want to mess with you, nobody want to knock your head off of just being, just existing, you know what I mean? Like, because in the world, and it's like people, you know, we have these patterns that we have in New Orleans. You know, we want to test each other and do all that extraness. You know, in other places, you know, they just living, they chilling, you know, they ain't worrying about it. They got money, they took care of, they got food. You know, it ain't quite like that. You know what I'm saying?
Feel like a sense of peace where you can actually just calm down right. and just be like, right. oh, let me try this sport out right here.
Right. So yeah, that was an experience. Yeah.
So how was football for you then?
So. My freshman, it was dope. You know, I played D-line and running back. You know what I'm saying? And by the end of the season, I was playing more D-line. And it was dope, man. Like, I was kind of getting on my – I don't feel like I was that good my freshman year. It was my first time ever playing. Like, I don't think I had the endurance. I don't think I was just in shape enough. I've never practiced or did anything, you know, far as football. You know, football, you need to get in football shape, at least be aware of it in a sense to actually, like, be good. Like, you can be in shape, but football shape is totally different. You know what I'm saying? So that was different. But that off season, me, my cousin, the guy I was telling you about, Russell, and a couple other freshmen, we went up and started to, you know, off season, you go up. You can either go, like, sophomore team and you practice or you do your weightlifting with them. We went up with the seniors. You know, which I didn't know, like, dang, y'all let me go up. I wasn't that good. I don't think I was that good yet, but I was big. I was a bigger guy, so I'm thinking they could mold me. They may be thinking they could mold me and, you know, do whatever. So, but you know, that happened. Went through that off season. It was crazy. Threw up a million times. I'm very competitive, so like I want to be number one in every drill.
Yeah.
So I was throwing up. I was going crazy, and at that time I didn't know nothing about nutrition. I didn't think nutrition was nothing. I thought you can drink soda, pop, Coke, eat whatever you want to eat, and you'd be the healthiest. I didn't believe in all that, and that's what I did, and it cost me. Like, my liver was, like, I used to feel like dying, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it was crazy.
So after high school, what did you get into after high school?
After high school? So prior to high school, like, with the football thing, I was actually, like, getting recruited. You know what I'm saying? By the time my senior year, I got really good. You know, I was, like, you know, on the All-Star team, getting recruited by, like, Ohio State, TCU, really big-name schools or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I just found myself, you know, since like I said, my freshman year was my first time ever playing.
Yeah.
So I didn't have no deep connection with football like everybody else did. And didn't know how to live without it. Like, I lived most of my life without it. Even though I had got really good at it. At a kind of like at a big kind of big school or whatever. I didn't have that in me to want to continue to put so much energy into football or whatever, into the sports. I felt like I can be using that energy to something more productive.
So around that age, what did like spark your imagination? What was like, what were you into at that age? What took your interest outside of football?
I mean, I think it was just as a young person, still at 17, 18, I just wanted to do something different outside of sports, being a black man.
Yeah.
And not being just a sports figure, just, oh, I'm good at sports, that's all I can do. I wanted to expand myself in a different way. You know what I'm saying? That would lead me to want to join the military and do something different, something my family never did, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
So joining the military, was you just trying to do something different, or did you... Well, why did you join the military in the first place? What was that process?
So like I said, I'm a very competitive person, I really love to challenge myself. Honestly, like football, I had got so good at it, it became kind of boring to me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, this is not even a challenge to me. Like, honestly speaking, like, and I was like, you know what? Like, I want to do something that actually challenged me to grow in a different way. Mm-hmm. So, I went and I signed up for the military, and I felt like, you know, that could challenge me in a different way.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
How old were you when you signed up for the military?
I was 18.
You was 18?
Yeah.
And so you went in because you wanted to be challenged?
I wanted to be challenged. I wanted a mental challenge, a different physical challenge.
You felt like you got that when you went to boot camp?
Definitely, 100%. Yeah, because I think day one or day two, I was like, wow. Like, what the hell did I do?
What did I sign up for? I did the same thing. I was like, oh, I made a mistake.
It was crazy, man. I cried a few times at boot camp. It was very challenging, bro. Like, to be honest with you. Yeah.
Yeah, what was the process? So what was the hardest part about it for you?
The hardest part? I think the physical part wasn't wasn't that tough. Mm. But it was just the mental things, because everything that they lay out to you and say you need to pass all these things and have these standards here to graduate.
Mm.
And me seeing all these people come, like it's being called ASMODE.
Oh, dude, ASMODE. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the people come back for weeks because they fail
their swim test.
Their swim test.
Or any other physical test.
Tests that they have to take.
I almost got ASMODE. Is that what it's called? Because I didn't pass my swimming test.
I literally
passed my swimming test the 3 days before boot camp graduation.
Oh, shit. So you just kept going walking.
I kept going.
With your towel.
In the freezing cold in Chicago.
Right.
Every single day.
You tried the float, you kept dropping?
I kept singing straight to the bottom.
Just
like every other black person.
Every black person. Our bones are stronger than everybody. It's heavier. It's more dense than everybody else.
That's what they were telling me. It drove me crazy, though.
Yeah.
Well, it was to the point where I wasn't even scared to dive off the plank. I was so used to the water because I was going so much.
Right.
I just couldn't figure out how to actually swim.
Right, right.
Like, on top of water.
Mm-hmm.
It was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And just being able to pass it that last...
Mm-hmm.
day,
mm-hmm.
or I got sent back.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, nah, I passed it. I ran all the way back to the barracks, so damn happy.
Turned up.
Turned all the way up, bro. I already know, dog. Man.
That was
the biggest challenge I think I personally had outside of just the mental.
Right.
When you get past the mental stuff, you know, you get used to it. It was the worst was probably swimming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, swimming. I went back, I had to go one day. Like extra afterwards, you know, like they do everything, all the training. Like I think maybe 2 or 3 days they do all the water training.
Yeah.
I think I had to pass the floating thing one more time. Like I failed it, and everybody, you know, everyone's in the stands who's waiting to go.
Yeah,
right. The repeats, all of them was black. I think it was like one person.
No, everybody.
It was like 25 people that was.
Everybody
black.
Everybody was black. I remember like because we all sit in the benches.
Right.
And I'm looking around, I was like,
all of them black.
It's just a bunch of skinny black boys.
Right. Our bones, we just going straight to the bottom. Bro.
It's funny because all the girls who couldn't swim, they figured it out because, you know, they float a lot easier than us.
They lighter than us, literally.
And as soon as they figured out how to float, boom, they were gone the next day. I was like, damn.
Yep. And, you know, honestly, like, when the floating situation, like, you know, you got the people underneath the instructors that's underneath. They're kind of like, you know, seeing things, you know, they'll kind of, you know, led you up a little bit like you're black, I need a little help, brother.
I think he gave me a little bit of a tap, like,
right.
How long was the pool, 50 yards?
I don't remember.
It was long.
Yeah.
But I remember like maybe 5 yards away from the finish line, I felt myself sinking.
Oh, for real?
Dude came out of nowhere and said, tap, tap.
Oh, okay.
He tapped me, I floated up.
Right.
Touched the side, they said, you're done. I was, oh, man.
Okay. See, the swimming part, because they make you go down back and forth.
Yeah, yeah.
That I passed all that, but you know, it's the time where they make you just float. Yeah. You just have to float. You remember mm-hmm. that?
That's when they make you put the air inside of your overalls.
Right, you just
got
to float.
Yeah.
You just
got to
float.
That was easy for me.
Oh, that was easy.
That's what I had.
I
figured that part out because I had to do the whole thing
over
and over every day for like what 3 months straight.
Right.
Yeah, I figured that part out. Yeah. All right, so the mental part of boot camp for you,
mm-hmm.
what was hard about it? Was it being away from your family, or just being away from like what you used to? Because I think that was the biggest culture shock for me, seeing people from different states
mm-hmm.
and seeing how everybody act different,
mm-hmm.
seeing how like grown men couldn't take being yelled at,
right.
or I didn't understand that. You know, you coming from an African and a Southern background, mm-hmm. I'm used to everybody yelling at you. You play
right.
football, people are yelling at you. So
mm-hmm.
that part of the military was easy for me.
Mm-hmm.
Used to people getting yelled at, but it was the separation of family.
Mm.
Not like
during boot camp.
Yeah,
mm.
during boot camp, not having nobody to call on. You mm-hmm. can't do this, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that part was starting to take a toll on me.
Mm-hmm.
So was that something you had difficulty with, or was it?
I didn't have any difficulty with that. I had a girlfriend at the time, so that was a little difficult being away from her. But she wrote me every week or whatever, so that was cool.
Yeah.
But again, it was that more or less anxiety, knowing that I have to pass all these different things to graduate.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? To actually finish,
mm.
and you know, it all happened, and you know, it's great.
Well, where'd you get stationed at? Were you on the East Coast or? Were you...
So yeah, I got stationed in San Diego, West Coast.
That was your first
duty station. Yeah.
Yeah. When was your first appointment?
First deployment?
Yeah.
It was in 2011. What was the deployment called? I forgot. What was it? you remember.
It was on our ship?
It was on our ship.
Really?
Yeah.
Also, RIMPAC.
Yeah, RIMPAC. No, was it RIMPAC? It was the Cleveland's tour, like going away tour.
Oh, okay. It was that humanitarian cruise.
It was like...
I forgot what it was actually called, but it was like a humanitarian cruise.
Yeah, it was... Yeah. Forgot the name.
That was your first deployment with us?
That was my first.
How long were you in the military till then?
We
went straight from boot camp, well, I mean, straight from A school, straight to our ship.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a luck. What'd you do after that, after we decom?
So when we decom, I went to a ship called USS Lake Champlain, which was a, DDG.
It was a small boy then.
It was a small boy.
See, that means y'all got to hit a couple more ports.
Yes, so we went a few places, but we didn't go on a full blown deployment yet.
Right.
Yeah, because the ship was getting all these upgrades to it, so it was in the yards mm-hmm. quite a bit.
Yeah,
and so we didn't really do much. And the ship, like actually, right after I got out, the ship had like was planning on going on deployment stuff like that.
Word.
Like maybe a few months out, I had just missed the deployment.
How many years did you do?
4 years.
You did four. You did four, and you was done.
Four, and I was done.
How'd you know you was done? What made you not re-enlist?
I promised myself when I first got in that, again, like I wanted that challenge.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like I wanted to finish college. I wanted to go to college. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? And I promised myself once I did my 4 years, I'm going to college and I'm going to mm-hmm. complete college.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So what made you want to go to school? What did you go to school for? So you got out. Let's take it back.
Mm-hmm.
You got out. And as soon as you got out, did you stay in California or you went back home?
Soon as I got out, I went to New Orleans, back to New Orleans. I stayed out there for about, I say, anywhere from like nine months to a year.
Mm.
My mom moved to Vegas, and she was like, "Baby, come with me to Vegas." You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm be there by myself. I kind of want to. Her job moved out there,
mm-hmm.
so we moved. I stayed out there with her for a solid year. I worked at Foot Locker.
Yeah,
I was one of the assistant managers. At Foot Locker. Well, mm-hmm. I was gearing up to be a full time assistant manager because it was at a big store. It was like one of the biggest stores in the country.
Yeah.
Far as like income and growth.
Yeah.
Whatever. So on the strip, I did that for a year, and then I wound up back in California.
Did you know what you wanted to do when you got out the Navy, outside of go to school?
I wanted to be a computer scientist. So I started school in computer science.
That's kind of far away from fashion.
Yeah, yeah. It was, you know, I felt like that something was just like, you know, like even in the military, it was like, hey, you know, get into computers. You know, that's the future. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's something that, you know, we can all do and have a good paying job. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And pay a decent wage and also jobs galore. Like, you know, it's gonna always need those.
Yeah,
I didn't think about really being on the creative side at that point. It was
yeah.
more or less like, let's do something that I can really make a you know an income.
What made you, what started that shift then to try to expand your creative side?
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't really know, man. Like, it was just like, I said to myself, like, you know, there's something I could do. Like, at first, when I was in Vegas, actually, I told myself, you know, I can sell hats. I can create hats. You know what I'm saying? That's something I can invest in. I can have a little bit of money in. Because I was thinking, like, it take a lot of money to start, you know, a clothing line or a fashion line. I was thinking that's way out of my league. I can start a hat line. So that's kind of where it started. And then once I got to, I graduated in the Bay Area. I went to College of San Mateo out there, like, and I started kind of get connected with a few people that was in the industry. And I was like, you know, you can do this. And doing my research on it, I was like, oh, this is something I can actually do. I can actually, you know, start my brand, you know. And I just started a plan, like, you know, when I got some income in, or when a potential income I knew I was going to get maybe from school or from whatever, you know, and this is how much money I can allocate here, and I can start my brand.
Yeah.
You know, that's when it started to real, seem real to me, you know?
So it starts to materialize. Okay, this thing is doable. Like, it's possible.
Right.
So what did you start with first? You start off with hats?
I made like a sample, like one hat in Vegas. And what was crazy was it was like a little bolt, right? And maybe like a month later, I seen a brand actually like make hats with the same design that was like super dope.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn, well, that's out the window. And yeah, that was it. Yeah. That's where it started.
So it started from there. Where'd you take it? Where'd you keep going? Did you keep going, or is you just kind of like, all right, well, somebody else doing hats?
So, all right. So after that, I really started to get into it when I moved to LA after I finished school in the Bay. So I really, that's when I got with this guy at a factory, and I started to kind of bring in my designs and tell him, like, hey, this is what I want. And we had a few samples made or whatever, and then kind of COVID happened.
Yeah.
So I know we kind of skipping a lot, but that's when kind of COVID happened. And that didn't fall through, you know. He had a lot of issues, a lot of backups, and you know, that kind of put a bad taste in my mouth. But I started with the new partners or whatever, and we got it popping.
You got it popping. So where you at right now with your line?
So right now,
what's the name of it?
Renard. Yeah.
So you just named Renard
just
after
Renard.
Yourself.
Right.
Yeah. So where you at with it?
So right now we're getting up to launch, bro. We getting up probably about 2-3 weeks. You're gonna launch. The line, I mean, obviously COVID, you know, pushed a lot of things back. We were supposed to launch back in October, but, you know, it pushed a lot of things back, and we're going to first do pre-orders, but we have all the designs ready to go. Yeah.
So what's the line about?
So the line, you know, it's a luxury brand with great materials and great designs. I wanted to make the brand, you know, the clothes itself. We're gonna talk about the brand a little bit, but the clothes itself, I wanted the clothes to be, you know, great cuts, great fit, and great material. So you can wear it anywhere. You can wear it, you know, if you're going to like a, you know, a nice little, you know, club, you can chill, and you can chill with it at the crib. You can just fly all the time, you know, because of the difference in the materials and the cuts. It has a edge to it, but at the same time, you know, you can dress it up and down, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I'm just talking about, you had an educational background.
Right. So the brand itself, it's about, you know, obviously Black empowerment and being Black owned and understanding our roots here in America. Black people roots in America, because we've been educated. I'm a history major, so we've been educated so much that we're, you know, all Black people are African, like such as you.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's really to get our people to understand where this is indigenous owned. This is us, and kind of getting our identity back.
Yeah.
You know, getting our identity back and saying we're here in business. We know who we are. We know we've been colonized, our education been colonized, our people been colonized, but it's starting to get our people back.
I just learned that there were indigenous Black people here already, like who really look African. Mm-hmm. They was here already. There was kind of wiped out with the Native Americans.
Right. Well, we wasn't wiped out. We were just, the education, what we were taught, it wiped our identities out. Okay. We're still here. So most people, most black people in America are indigenous to the Americas.
Okay.
But you have, you know, colonized education systems who say, you know, you guys are actually West African. Mm. Right. And we've been indoctrinated with that, within that knowledge for so long. You know, most of our people believe that. Yeah. Like, as you can tell, me and you look totally different. Yeah. You just came from Africa.
Yeah.
Right. Our people have been here for a long time. And, you know, the world creates the humans in different areas of the planet.
Yeah.
And they have different features based on where they come from.
Yeah.
Right. And that area, the United States, black people have a distinct look.
Yeah.
You know, we don't look like Africans. We may look, some of us may look, have a little bit more in common in the way we look.
Yeah.
Or whatever the case may be. But in, for the most part, most of us are indigenous to Americas. Now, they did bring black slaves to the Americas. No one denying that. Mm. But those slaves, just as much as there were black colonists from Europe, it wasn't just white colonists.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It was all of that. All, you know, it was all of them, you know? So you had black and white colonists from Europe. You had Africans come who mixed in with native indigenous black people.
Yeah. You know? So the whole purpose of the brand is to educate on originality from American culture, real exactly. American culture.
Exactly. It's about getting our identity back and getting our creative side to show, and within business, you know, to show that we're here, we know what's going on, we're educated, and we're going to, everything that we do, we're going to show that. We're going to empower our people in that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So does
Cause we need it. You know?
So does each article of clothing tell that story?
Right. So yeah, each season will tell that story.
Okay.
Each one. And we're going to implement quite a bit of indigenous culture into it and knowledge. I might have some lesson plans, each one. Not necessarily lesson plans, but something new for people to learn. Not just black indigenous people, but Americans, because we need it.
Yeah.
You know, we don't really understand why it's so much police brutality, all these issues within America. You have to go back to the origin. We at war.
Yeah.
We've been at war. We've been at war for the land.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So you have, you know, Europeans come here, re-educate us. So we're attached, our minds and bodies are attached to a foreign land.
Yeah.
So they're allowed just to come swoop it up. You know, take our resources, take all these different things. We don't have the attachment that we should. And so we can actually thrive here properly. You get what I'm saying?
Okay. So how do you feel your clothing line is going to do that?
Right.
How are you going to connect it to?
Right. Well, I mean, again, each season is going to be branded in a sense about indigenous. It's going to be branded with indigenous culture in mind, as well as we're going to educate through each season as well. Meaning, if you go on the website, right, you're going to see blogs, you're going to see information about indigenous black Americans.
Yeah.
You're going to see about the different tribes. You know, it's going to always be new information there, you know what I'm saying, for each drop that we do. You know what I'm saying? So it's slowly educate our people, because at the end of the day, I went to school to be an educator, right?
Yeah.
So for me, I wanted to put my creative side and, you know, my education side together.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And, you know, help our people understand that we can educate, we can be business owners, and, you know, we need to do it at this time.
Yeah.
This is very important, you know. We're at war. You know what I mean? Like, if I understand we don't see it that way, you know, but these people that's in power, which is mostly, you know, our European brothers and sisters, you know, they're at war with us, you know, at the end of the day. That war, and that war starts in business. That war starts in taking control of your creativeness, right?
Yeah.
And not let other people, you know, just fully benefit off and more than you. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah.
So I feel like with everything going on now, with all the social movements happening right now, education, you know, holds a big part of it.
Right.
So I feel like the more education that we have, the more we learn about each other's culture, the more we just kind of gel as a human race general.
Right.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So as far as your mission goes, where do you see it? Where do you see yourself taking this in the next coming seasons?
I mean, at the end of the day, like, you know, it's just keep going at it until just keep educating at the end of the day. Yeah. I mean, it's you know, white supremacy and the all the history and information they've given us is mm-hmm. is so huge, so big. You know, you just got to chip at it each time. You know, mm-hmm. that's what I'm doing. I just want to make sure that, you know, the bigger the brand, the more aware it is going to be, right?
Yeah.
So as long as I'm making good designs, great designs, I mean, obviously the story about the brand is very important.
Yeah.
And people are going to be connected to that.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like, the clothes matter too. Mm. So for me, I want that challenge to make sure that, you know, the clothes are dope enough to where people actually want it. Mm. And at the same time, they're listening to what I got to say as well. Mm. They're listening to what the brand has to say as well.
Yeah.
You know, and taking that to heart, and it actually start to fill in holes of why America it is the way it is today. Why yeah. are we getting treated the way we are today? It ain't just because, you know, they don't like us. It's because we've been here.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want us to know certain information and want us mm-hmm. to thrive here because it takes away from them feeding their families.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? This is a system. Yeah. Racism and this racial shit is a economic system.
Yeah.
And people got to understand that.
Mm. So what do you feel like the greatest strength comes from in this battle? Because you said there's a war going on.
Right, right, right.
So what do you think our greatest strengths are?
I think, you know, where we'll be great at is just being us, being great and not necessarily having to always call out this white supremacy situation and put so much energy into that. Yeah. But just continue to create, continue to work with each other, mm-hmm. continue to be inclusive with everybody, not just yeah. black people, but yeah. the way humanity is supposed to be, that's our power.
Yeah.
You know, everyone comes from us.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So we have to be the ones to lead all these people out of these nasty social created movements, as far as racism and the creation of that ideology. We need to have a place for those people to come. We can't just, you know, be negative towards them and say, oh, you're this, you're that. Mm-hmm. Our power will be and should be in leading them out and having them have a comfortable place to come back mm-hmm. to humanity. Mm-hmm. And I think as black people, we have that in us. We're the most, I feel like we're some of the most powerful people on the planet.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Where did you get the idea for this? Mm-hmm. Like, were you always this person? Did you always see yourself and your background as a black American as separate from everything else in America? Or is this something you just kind of learn? The more you learn about your identities, the more you started to gain knowledge about self.
Right. I mean, in New Orleans, I mean, everybody black, you know, but at the same time, a lot of my people, you know, they would tell you, like, we ain't Africans. We from America. And they'll tell us, they told me, like, the tribes that we all come from. You know, I actually have my grandmother, her grandfather is from California. He was from a tribe here.
Yeah.
And she was like, he black than any African. He was dark, mm-hmm. all this. So at the end of the day, that's where it kind of started for me. But what were you saying? I'm sorry. Let me get back to it.
How did you find your identity?
How I found my identity?
Yeah.
Okay. In what?
In just being a young black man in America.
Young black man.
And then taking that and using your creativity to tell the story of how blacks, the original indigenous blacks in America.
Right. I just feel like it's needed, man. I feel like, you know, it's really needed. Mm. And at the same time, being a history major, you know, you learn so much about America and its history, and you're able to connect so many dots about like what's going on. You know, it was just natural. Like, you know, you learn about this, it disgusts you. You're like, wow, this really the history here. This is really what's happening. You know, the first time I actually learned about black people being from America was in a college class. I took a class when I was a sophomore, African American ethnic study class.
Yeah.
And my professor was like, he told me, he was like, we had a book. He had his own, not his own book, but he had a actual textbook mm-hmm. that isn't widespread, but for his class, you know, specifically. Anyway, in that textbook, it talked about the black people being here in America and also the black people that they shipped out, the African Americans that they shipped out during the slave trade, meaning that during the 1500s and the 1600s. Mm. You know, that's a story I've never heard before.
Yeah.
They've never told us that they they took out thousands, hundreds and thousands of.
Yeah, I never knew that.
Black American men, right? And they brought in African American men to start colonizing us, right? Mm. This process, like, it kind of blew my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So after you learned that, the more education you got on that,
right,
you started to feel more of a purpose,
right,
to inform others,
right. And you know, I'm a Christian as well. So for me, it's not more or less the identity of being Black. You know, I want to be identified as being a Christian. I want to be identified as being a child of God first. But at the end of the day, you know, we're in a war battle that actually started with the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
Catholic Church was the ones who actually, you know, told the Europeans, hey, it's okay to go colonize all these people across the planet, these indigenous people across the planet with the doctrine of discovery.
Mm-hmm.
They the ones who infiltrated the Christian church.
Yeah.
So I know it starts with them to why my people are in the position that they're in today, where we can't have the connection that we need with God, you know. So it's just not being a Black person, but it's really people in general, you know. But it does start, and it has something to do with Blackness as well, you know.
Elaborate more on that as far as your faith and your mission.
Right. My faith. Yeah. Well, you know, as well as being, like, for us, even just the brand, like the brand and my mission with that is, yes, I want people to understand, Black people and just people in general, to be aware of the indigenous of Americans, of Black Americans, not just Black Americans, but Black people across the planet. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Black people are from every part of the planet, not just Africa. You can't just say, you know, Black people was just from one continent.
Yeah.
God made us through the whole planet. Mm. You know, you had different peoples come and maybe colonize in different areas. Mm. And you maybe use the out of Africa theory, which I understand a lot of people, that's what they was taught and stuff like that. But at the same time, I want that veil, I want the overall arching, what I'm going to lead to with the brand is also Christian values as well.
Mm.
You know, being able to understand that we're still brothers and sisters, and, you know, we're seeking the heavenly kingdom as well. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is just one part that I feel like I have the education to teach people about that get them closer to God, get them to understand about, you know, the Catholic Church and their teachings and what they've done to disconnect us from God. And part of that is separating us based off of color, race, Black and white. Mm. So having them understand that understanding of Black people being indigenous to America, it gets us a better understanding of that what they've done.
Yeah.
And I'm going to teach that as well, like what the Catholic Church done.
Yeah.
Because they're using white supremacy as a colonization tactic.
Yeah.
Right? As well as they're using Christianity as a colonization tactic.
Yeah.
Because they're not really Christians.
Yeah.
They use that as a war tool.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
So it's my mission to educate people to ultimately get back closer to God.
Okay. Yeah. So looking at yourself now, did you always know you would be some type of teacher?
Mm-hmm. No, not at all. Yeah, I don't think.
Did you think you'd be a creative, or you'd be able to, like, lead people in a way through creative design?
No. I mean, growing up, I don't think it was something I ever thought about. I mean, I thought, I didn't ever think that I can actually, like, I wasn't taught to own your own business.
Yeah.
To make your own design. I was kind of taught to be a consumer, like, you know, buy FUBU, buy, you know, Polo, buy Ralph Lauren. That's your clothes, you know.
Yeah.
You don't have it. You're not from a family that can kind of build a brand, build a business. You know what I'm saying? But only until I got older, where, you know, we were getting preached to, you know, hey, Black people we need to own our own stuff.
Yeah.
We're some of the most creative people on the planet, as we can see. We lead in popular culture across the planet, and that's always going to be that way.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I feel like that is our strength, creating.
Innovation.
You know, innovation, because we have that. And don't let anyone tell us otherwise.
Yeah.
Don't let, you know, the subtle, you know, indoctrination of us thinking, you know, when they teach us all, you know, everything was created by white folks. You know, we don't have the understanding that we can create too. You know, there's a reason why they've done that in our history books, our textbooks, you know, all the inventions, major inventions. America was even created by white folks. that give us the understanding, like, damn, we don't, we that's something we don't do. Yeah, we create in the, you know, in music and stuff like that, but we can do much more than that.
Yeah.
You know, we can reach the sky. We can go above and beyond. Mm. It's not about, it's not equality with us.
Yeah.
We can be past the equality. We are past the equality. That's why it's so many issues, because they understand we're not equal to them.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
What do you mean by that?
I feel like they understand that it's the, okay, so today, in today's time,
yeah,
colonization is not necessarily just with guns, weapons, and stuff like that. Mm. It's with culture.
Absolutely.
It's power. That is power.
Yeah.
Culture. We lead the world, the planet, in popular culture.
Mm-hmm.
And these countries, these people, they know that.
Yeah.
That's something that we don't understand and we don't embody. And that's where our power is at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and but they know.
So what do you think happens to our culture in this world that we live in now? Because like you've seen going to different countries.
Right.
The black culture, as mm-hmm. far as where we dress, talk, mm-hmm. entertain, is widespread now,
right,
to where you can go to places in Asia, places in Africa, places in Europe, where they probably never seen a black American,
mm-hmm.
but they know how to identify with the culture through the internet.
Right, right.
So do you think we're losing who we are as a culture because mm-hmm. everybody has access to it now?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you think it's beneficial for us to let everybody have access to our culture?
I feel like, you know, at the end of the day, I feel like, I'm gonna say it more broad. I feel like race is not a real thing. I feel like a culture isn't necessarily black or white.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a color. It's not a pigmentation,
mm-hmm.
right? It's been created for us, so these people have they can survive, right?
Mm-hmm.
That separation, right? And they're able to manage things, manage wealth better for themselves.
Yeah.
So I feel like, you know, it's just innate. Black people, God has given us a lot of blessings with culture, with power and things that we could, you know, with creativeness. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's like, at the end of the day, I don't want that to be a barrier, you know, because on one skin is different, mm-hmm. that we're spreading, you know, like they can't accept our culture and be part of the culture because of a skin complexion.
Yeah.
You know, it's more or less like we at the end of the day, we're going to lead it regardless.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. But do you think ownership has something to play in all of this?
Right.
Because really, yeah, we might develop the culture, mm-hmm. but the people who own it and sell it are the ones who are going to continue to benefit off of it.
Right. And I think that's the issue black people kind of have, because we do have God bless us with so much creative energy that we're so busy being creatives and not actually understanding the business side of it.
Yeah.
You know, white people and other color of people, whatever you want to call it, classify themselves, you know, they're in that pocket more because they don't have as much, probably have as much talent for the most part, or in those. But not saying white people don't have talent. They have amazing, a lot of talent. But in the day, you know, we can see, black people are, you know, very powerful when it comes to sports, these different avenues. So we're so busy doing that and being creative and being popular or whatever the case may be, mm-hmm. that we lose sight of the business. And we need to really understand the business aspect of it. And that's where we lose a little bit of our power in.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't feel like we should understand that, yes, the business side is important, but in today's time, you able to influence people,
mm-hmm.
is even more power, to be honest.
Yeah.
You be able to actually like influence the way people think and move across the planet is more powerful than it's getting more powerful than money.
Yeah. Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you want to live good. You want to live nicely. But again, black people need to realize that their power is in who they are, right? And we don't need all these different things. We just need to get whatever little stuff that we do have, as far as houses and homes or cars, whatever, we need to appreciate those things.
Yeah.
But at the same time, again, understand our power and culture. That's where we lie at.
Yeah.
We don't need as much material gain and wealth as anyone.
Okay, but if everybody has access to the culture,
yeah,
right, and they have their set of tools, they have mm-hmm. their set of what it is that makes them great.
Mm-hmm.
So adding what we have to them, don't you think that kind of puts the black culture at a disadvantage somewhat, knowing that we're giving,
mm-hmm.
but not really taking from anything. Mm-hmm. But others are taking and
not putting out,
but really just using ours to take.
Right. And that's, you know, that's something I feel like those coaches, those people, they're going to have to, they're going to answer to it at one point at some day, which they're answering to today.
Okay.
You know, their all this history is coming up, and, you know, a lot of people are committing suicide. A lot of people are depressed and feeling some type of way because of what their identity represented, what their identity have done, you know, to different cultures, different people. You get what I'm saying?
Mm.
I feel like we need to realize, yes, you know, we don't have it all financially, and we don't have everything understood about the business side, which that's something we can grow at. Mm. But understand our power in culture, right? Understand that and let those people do them. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Let those people, if they want to be greedy, they want to be in the middle of everything and take. Our power is going to be in culture, and we're going to stay positive. We're going to have a positive sense of who we are, right? And we're going to spread that to the rest of the world. We need to start to ignoring them in a big sense, because they feel in the effects of being left back. That's why all this stuff is happening.
Okay.
You get what I'm saying? That's why, you know, they have all this animosity towards us. Mm. They feel like they're getting left back and behind.
What do you mean by getting left back?
Their culture. Mm. Culture, like their cultures are being left behind and no one cares about it anymore.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? Black people want to be close to black people. People want to be close to that identity, that soul, what that means to be black.
So it's like a white supremacist fighting for his place to be seen as a white man or...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Because, you know, your identity matters.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And the way that these people feel about themselves, unfortunately, it means, you know, what they've been working so hard to do, it means to keep you on your knees, keep you focusing on the thing that you don't may have. You may not have all these financial things and wealth, but you do have power and influence. You do know how to dance better than them. I'm just keeping it a buck. You hear me? You do know how to, you know, play basketball, all these different great things we're able to do. Like, let's focus on that. Let's build on that.
Yeah.
Let's do better than that, and not let these people just make us feel some type of way all the time in a negative pocket.
But that's where I go back to, like, have you ever heard the term convergence culture?
Mm-mm.
And it's pretty much saying, because of the internet, because of the way we take in media, everybody, the world's become one culture. There is more black. There is no more white. There is no more this. Mm-hmm. We all falling in line to what we see on the internet. Because just like how you said, okay, yeah, black kids could dance. If you look on the internet now, there's a lot of good white kids who could dance their ass off. There's a lot of white, Asian, Spanish kids that can dance, that can do pretty much everything that a quote-unquote black person could do better.
You're proving the point right now.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's like, if you say they're being left behind, I think everything is coming to where it's equaling up.
Yeah. But it's a culture. Who started those cultures? Who started those dance ideas and moves? That's black culture.
Yeah, that's all black culture. You know what I'm saying? Like, is it a problem that they get to take
participate, take
advantage of it and also gain popularity from it?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I don't feel like it's a problem at all.
Okay.
I feel like that's, like you just said, that's where it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
We're coming back to being humans again. We're not just black, white, Asian. We're human.
Yeah.
Like, God didn't say, you know, you this human, you're black. You're not. Like, we're just different tones. We have different features.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's it.
Yeah.
Based off where we're at on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, we're becoming a more worldwide connected, you know, culture. And there's certain cultures that's part of that don't want to be left behind. And they're fighting for living hell for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And they're fighting to make sure that certain cultures are lowered in a sense too.
Mm-hmm. So going back on the topic of identity, where do you think identity, as far as black Americans, where do you think that has a place in this new world?
I feel like it needs to get the identity needs to go, because they think about it like this. It's a strategy, man. It's I think about it as white supremacy as military strategy here.
Okay.
Because if it's a if they can create a black identity, they can make sure they, that a white identity exists.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If it's
yeah.
no black identity, right, mm-hmm. that gives more space for people who, I guess, quote unquote, classify themselves as white. It gives that less space to live.
Yeah.
Because there's no black identity. We're yeah. just humans. Well, we're... You know, we're based off, say for instance, we're in LA right now, we're mm-hmm. LAans. It doesn't matter what color you're in.
Yeah.
Right? It's just what color you are. It's just, mm-hmm. you're just part of the city. This is where you're born.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. But if blackness, the black identity is so powerful, it gives so much space for whiteness to be there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that's something that they make sure happens. They want a mm-hmm. black identity. Mm-hmm. You may think that they don't, but it's strategy.
Yeah,
it's pretty it's genius. Like the KKK yeah. still exists. They yeah. still work to make sure that whiteness or pale people exist.
Mm-hmm.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So to do that, they have to make other identities to make sure it's a separation.
Do you think that's tribalism though? Because if we don't have yeah. racism, which I think one day racism will be gone, but it's going to be something else.
Oh, they're working to keep it in. But
yeah.
What you
yeah.
mean? Tribalism. So
if it's not racism, then it's classism.
Right.
If you're in this type of class, if you're in this type of society, then you're going to. So do you think we would all ever reach? Do you think we would ever reach a time to where we're all equal as humans? Or do you think there's always going to be some type of tribalism where, you know, you're going to want to connect with these people more and these people are going to think they're better than that people?
Right. I mean, I think, unfortunately, human nature is going to probably be some bad apples, meaning some bad groups who want more power than others and want to take advantage of others.
Yeah.
And some of those groups, some groups that maybe, you know, been trying to do well to people around the planet, they're like, you know what? Like, we have to be just like them to survive.
Yeah.
We got to be worse. We got to be the baddest ones because these people going to take advantage of us.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the unfortunate thing about the planet that we live on. We don't live on, that'll be stupid for me to say that, you know, everyone is all kumbaya and everyone yeah. gonna do good by each other. That's not gonna happen, unfortunately. So the white identity itself, it kind of gives you, you kind of understand it at the same time. You get that, you know, you gotta kind of be on the offensive to be defensive.
Like
they've created a system where, you know, even though it's based on whiteness of pale skin, to defend themselves, to survive in a planet, in a hostile planet. And you got to also understand that these people are, you know, it's for every 10 people. Well, I'm sorry, they're 1 out of 9.
Yeah.
Out of 10, I'm sorry. So 90% of the world is colored. It's only 10% Caucasian white people on the planet. So they feel like it's somewhat of a disadvantage, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they have to be on the offensive all the time, at y'all next, at everybody yeah. next. Hey, as a defensive. So I get that in a sense. So yeah, it's a complicated world, man.
Yeah. All right, so we're running out of some time, but yeah. there's one question I would like to know.
Yeah.
What would you tell your 12-year-old self about the man you are now and the world that we live in now?
Man, that's a question right there. 12-year-old. I wasn't thinking too much in 12-year-old. I wasn't even really thinking too much in the future, but I mean, I guess you asked me what would I tell myself then. I don't even know, bro. That's a deep question right there, bro. I would probably tell myself, like, you know, that I was going to, that, you know, I got out the box of being from New Orleans, got out the box of doing all these great things, which I never thought. I always thought at 12 years old, at whatever years old, because my parents, I had good parents who told me, you know, to always do the right thing. And even at 12 years old, I was different from the rest of my family members, like my siblings and stuff like that. I always tried to do the right things and listen to my parents because I knew they went through so much from making not the best choices.
Yeah.
And even at 12, I always tried to do the right things. I wouldn't think that I would be in the position I am today. I don't feel like, you know, I would, you know, probably graduate high school, all these things, college, stuff like that. But honestly, I feel like that's a that's an issue to have so low standards. You know what I'm saying? For myself, if I'm thinking about it that way, like, you know, this is something I should be doing.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate as a black person, as a black man, that, you know, I may think that I'm doing so great now, which I'm, this is stuff that I just should be doing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I should have been thinking that at 12 years old that, you know, this is something I can accomplish.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So if that answers your question.
Oh yeah, that did.
Yeah.
That did. I appreciate you coming through, bro.
Yeah, for sure, brother.
All right, y'all. That's it.
Yeah.
All right.